First of all, today is Monday, October 12, 2015, and today I just want to say a few words. With all the tragedy going on around us, and just now at the 9 o'clock news, according to first report, nothing's clear yet, but it seems we're okay. At Shahr Ayyad, a terrorist just came and was blown away. According to what I understood, no one on our side was hurt. And yesterday they dedicated the shiur in memory of Rabbi Reuven Averman. And now on the lighter side, I just want to say one word. Those of you who grew up in the Bronx and remember the Yankees in the golden age, Yogi Berra died recently at the age of 90. And a lot of hespedim was said for Yogi Berra and endless material written. But I want to just comment on one side of his life that no one really paid attention to. You take Yogi Berra, you take Phil Rizzuto, they were unbelievable role models because they had wonderful wives, they were honest husbands, they raised children and attempted to give them values. And I want to recall Yogi Berra that his life, you all know that the woman, when we get married, she goes around the man 7 times under the chuppah. The feminists have a problem with it. And I have no problem, I say, it's to remind a man who generally is raised in an environment where he becomes a very self-centered individual that there's someone now that you have to look at. She surrounds you, she's important to you, she fences you in, she guides you, it's your wife. And that was common. And Yogi, whose real name is Larry, although no one will believe me when I call him Larry Berra, Larry and Carmen Berra, and Phil Rizzuto as well, had a wonderful relationship with his wife. And if you want me to prove the depth of the relationship of Yogi with Carmen, some of you who know Yankee history, when Steinbrenner took over and all the Mishigas began and the zoo, as it was called, and Steinbrenner firing Yogi, not even telling him when he was manager, had someone else call him. So Yogi didn't show his face in Yankee Stadium for 15 years. And Steinbrenner pleaded with him to come back, he'll apologize. And Yogi insisted he had to apologize in front of Carmen. So it's something to think about. And again, Phil Rizzuto and Cora, her name was Cora Rizzuto, interesting names, had a wonderful relationship. And considering the United States today, with the president they have and the type of lifestyle that the Supreme Court advocates, we have a lot to learn from Yogi Berra. Okay. One step further and more serious now, I was happy to see something very interesting. I mentioned last week, we spoke last week about the Rebbe and secular studies and the fact that the Rebbe on one hand could know not only Kol HaTorah Kula but have such wide-ranging general knowledge. And on the other hand, when a young student came to him, if you asked him what I should do, says, I saw the letter with my own eyes to a girl who was so distant from Beis Yaakov, I would have told her to go to some ulpana in the Shomron, or in a girl terrifically involved with Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. And the Rebbe says to her, Beit Yaakov Kadima. And it's true right down the line. So we developed the idea that on one hand, the Rebbe didn't live in a perfect world, so anyone who had gone to college about tshuva or someone knowledgeable, and they never told him to stop, get your master's, get your doctorate, and spoke with him on his level. But someone that he could yet mold, Torah Hashem Tamima. And I raised the question about the Rav. What was Rebbe's real attitude? If we lived in a perfect world, perhaps all we had to do was be in brisk and learn and grow and steig. And there's a whole world out there that will invent the atom bomb, will invent the hydrogen bomb, will invent the salt vaccine, the Sabin vaccine, in an ideal world. And I often the rough contradicting of stuff. Let me say something that I didn't say last time. I laugh at all these individuals that attempt to analyze the Rav philosophically. What was his philosophic stance? What was his philosophic thrust? See, they don't really, they never knew the Rav. And the Rav left himself open for this type of analysis because he never published his learning. His learning was his life, his chidushim, his brish. But there, as Ezra Kefir has written and lectured so many decades ago, the Rav was a perfectionist. He was like Reb Chaim, like Reb Moshe. The Reb Chaim published basically nothing during his lifetime. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry published a sefer filled with chidushim, and the greatest machadesh of the generation published nothing. But that was a brisk psychological deficiency. You have to be perfect, you have to be perfect. All right, none of us are perfect, we're basar v'dam. So of course, when it comes to the Rav's learning, all you have, basically at the end of his life, when he mellowed, so Rav Yitzchak Twersky published the Sherim L'Zecher Abba Mori. But the Rav, what you see there is overwhelming, and the Rav is 1 million times more had everything been published. But the philosophy was published, so that's what everyone works on at the present time. What they don't realize about the Rav, he was reacting to the time, to the audience, to the place. That was not his main thrust in life. His main thrust was figuring out if you have Masechet Baba Batra, Masechet Kritot, and Masechet Gittin. That was really where he tried to give a system and be coherent. But when it comes to philosophy, you can work with the Rav, but you have to understand he's free to contradict himself. It's a different audience, a different time, a different place, a different message, a different drasha. Anyone who's going to be in the rabbinate here will be guilty of giving drasha in which you contradict yourself over 50, 60 years in the rabbinate. Okay, you're reacting. Excuse me?
His philosophical thought has a pretty strong thrust in you, but say that the
Yish Halacha will never be equal, that his hesped for Reb Chafa, for Reb Velvel, and his hesped for Reb Chaim Heller are masterpieces. This goes without saying, but to try to construct and even on a simple question like the Rav's attitude towards secular studies. So you take, and this is what we spoke about last week, I hope you looked it up in the Rav, in the second volume where he discusses Reb Shimshon Fol Hirsch and himself, you see that the Rav may very well be saying, I'm very proud of Yeshiva University because it's a yeshiva. And because the times demand it, we have a college. Fine, good. I'm not giving an opinion. I'm just trying to show you that it's not black and white. So I want to tell you, I have a lot of hana. Why? My student from this very kollel, Nadi Helfgott, they just published Tradition, a hard-covered volume, a green cover. I trust you've seen it. It was in honor of Rabbaran Lichtenstein, Lo Aleinu. It came out after Rabbaran died. In other words, it was all planned before, written before, and it came out. It's like a memorial volume, and it's a very, very fine volume. So Nadi Helfgott has an interesting article comparing the Rav and Rabbaran on various topics. And when it comes to this very issue, Nadi says he's not certain where the Rav stood. Compared to Rabbaran Lichtenstein, his viewpoint may have been much more narrow, and you don't find one place, basically, where the Rav really describes how he feels about general studies in an ideal world, unlike Rabbaran. So I had a lot of hana. There's Nadi Helfgott struggling with the very same issue I raised in class, and he says, black and white, you can't reach a definitive answer, unlike Rabbaran Lichtenstein. Okay, so that's what we spoke about last week. Then we went a little bit further, and we went into the Rebbe and that whole year after the sixth Rebbe died. And as I said, my intelligent understanding is, and as someone who's been through life, I think anyone who's older will understand what I'm saying, it evidently was a gradual decision. The logical person was Rav Shmaryahu Guraiyeh. We'll come back to Rav Shmaryahu Guraiyeh again. And when the Rebbe died, had the family had their way, and any other Hasidus, right at the funeral, they crowned the next Rebbe. The family announces who the next Rebbe will be. Take it or leave it. Hasidim have a choice. They can leave or they can remain. Shlonim split in half. I don't have to tell you when the Rebbe died in 1980, Rabbi Weinberg. So the most of Shlonim went with his son-in-law, the Netivat Shalom, most of Shlonim. But a part broke away with an aleph. They changed the spelling to differentiate, would put an aleph into the middle of Shloanim, and there in Bnei Brak, that's headed up by a Weinberg. The Hasidim have choice. I don't want to repeat what one Chassid told me about those who break away, but you can understand, it's when you have a breakaway, it's not exactly with the most happy feelings. But Chassidim have a choice. Lubavitch didn't announce. Lubavitch has had problems before when the Tzemach Tzedek died. There was a tremendous split, and the truth of the matter is that it could very well be the minority of the Chabadnikim at that time did not go, that went with Rabbi Shmuel, the fourth Rebbe, and the majority broke away with a different part of Chabad, a different family, all part of the Schneerson family. It lasted for many years until that family had no successor and didn't go further, and those who wished gravitated back to the original Chabad. But now there was a real problem. And as everything we spoke about last week, I stand on, the Hasidim forced the Rebbe to make up his mind. It is also said, I don't know if this can ever be proven, but among Chabadnikim you will often hear that Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka played a big role in his making the decision. And evidently, if I can interpret it properly, and I'm adding to what I said last week, I didn't speak about this, but if I can interpret it properly, Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka evidently sensed what was Hasidim, what was happening out in the street. She sensed the way the Hasidim were talking. And remember, the Ramash, Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the Ramash, from 1941 on, when he arrived in the States, once a month he used to speak in public. His father-in-law insisted that he fabrein, the Rashag fabrein, then he fabrein. And Hasidim, the word went out in the street, the Rashag is a fabulous individual, but the Ramash is one in a million years. And the Rebbetzin evidently said to him, this is what all the Hasidim called, so I imagine it's absolutely accurate, that she said, if you don't become Rebbe, all that my father did will be lost. Okay? And this is critically important. And I don't know if she understood the full impact, but again, as Rav Steinsaltz said, Rav Avraham Steinsaltz, no one said it better. At that moment, he stopped being Menachem Mendel Schneerson. He became the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He never had a private moment again in his life. The only moments that he was a human being as an individual were the moments he had tea with Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka. And as Rakefet said last week, and based upon the drasha of the Rav, this may be, B'nai Shemayim, why he was childless. Okay? And this is a fact of life. I mean, I'm the proudest person alive in this classroom. I was so busy over Yontif with grandchildren and great-grandchildren and smachot. I said to Malka, I'm going to be so anxious to get back to the classroom and no one should just put a bubble around my head. But Tanai and Hara, we had a great-granddaughter and naming and going to Modiin, Zalo Pashut, a wedding coming up, and the collar, and meeting the collar, and now I'm working on the ketuvah, and the names, and how they want it, and it's amazing. Kainain Hara. The Rebbe was totally dedicated 100% to Klal Yisrael. Okay. Now I want to come back. We describe that night, and that night too, when they declare him Rebbe. I mean, and this too shows you the power of the Hasidim, how this elderly Hasid from Manchester, from London, from England, gets up and he says, and he tells the Rebbe off, here's the Rebbe, this is the Rashag you're talking to. All right, the Rashag at that time was not yet 50. He was in his late 40s. And he tells him, we're not satisfied, Torah is nice. And he gets up and he makes a Shechiyonu after the Maimah. And all the books that came out in the Rebbe describe this night in great detail. And I want to spend the rest of the class today trying to understand what the Rebbe said that night. If you bear with me, you'll understand the difference between the Litvish Welt, the Hasidish Welt, and you'll understand why Chabad is unique. Now, that night, and I now come back again, let me give you the source, I don't believe I quoted it yet. I'm now quoting from Rebbe. By the way, last week I quoted from David Eliezeri, Rabbi David Eliezeri, his book that just came out, so I misplaced or displaced where he's Rebbe, where he built a tremendous Chabad center. He is the Chabad Rav of Yorba Linda, California. Took me a long time to learn how to pronounce it. Anyone recognize the name Yorba Linda? Who was born there? Richard Nixon. Who is buried there? Richard Nixon. Whose library, papers, presidency is housed there? Richard Nixon. Milhouse Nixon, if I have it correct. And Richard Nixon made the area famous. What Yorba Linda means is beyond me, but then again, I was rabbi in Lower Merion Synagogue, Balakinwid. I lived on Conshohocken State Road, so if you can, no one pronounces Balakinwid properly. Everyone says Balasinwid. It's Balakinwid. So I can't criticize living in Yorba Linda. It is closer to Los Angeles. I said Seattle. It is in Orange County. It's about, depending upon traffic, anyway from a 45-minute to a one-hour drive from Los Angeles. Now, another volume that they came out in the Rebbe, and I don't believe I quoted from it yet, is a very powerful, insightful volume, Rebbe, by Joseph Klushkin. Now, Joseph Klushkin also knew the Rebbe very intimately. He knew the Rebbe very intimately because, first of all, his grandfather, Reb Nissen Klushkin, was one of the Gedolei Yisrael, who was a Lubavitcher Chassid, and in all the pictures of the Fabrengens from the 50s into the 60s, it could even be into the 70s, you will see Reb Nissen Klushkin standing right next to the Rebbe. He was one of the Gaonim, a Posek Mufak, a Torat Mayim, I need not tell you. In addition, Nissen Klushkin's father was the Rebbe's personal accountant. So that Joseph Klushkin grew up with the Rebbe, basically a household word, a household phenomenon. And his volume is very interesting historically with his understanding. And the Hasidim have criticized it because they say he paints the Rebbe as being too open to Western culture. But then again, each individual rules his Rebbe through his own prisma. Rakefet views the Rav through the prisma of a little kid on Rothkopf. Rababa Braunschweigel viewed the Rav through his prisma. And we grew up together. Ab and I grew up together. We're buddies. And yet we each view the Rav quite differently. Although the core is, the basis is there. The basic understanding is the same. But we're individuals. Rav Hefshe Shechter viewed him his way. Saul Berman, Rabbi Berman of Stern College, viewed the Rav his way. So you can't criticize Rav Nissen Plushkin. It's the way he understood the Rebbe. And as I said at the very start of the class, the Rebbe related to him in his ballpark. It's like I've been asked a million times, could Rabbi Soloveitchik give two different answers to two different people? And the answer is absolutely. He answered you in your ballpark. It depends what the question was, but there's certain questions. I had the example, oh, I didn't give it. I gave it in the interview. Rabbi interviewed me last week. So I gave an example. They asked me about David Holtz's book. Everyone wants to know about David Holtz's books on the Rav. So you should know very simply that Rakefet has said it 1,000 times over. You read The Rav Thinking Aloud by David Holzer. That's what the book reads. That's a mistake. The Rav Thinking Aloud to David Holzer. If you read it that way, and I give you an example that I love, David. I'm very close to that. David is my Talmida. I have a big role in the Shidduch. It's not for now, but I entertain that Chabadnik. I said, I have Ruach HaKodesh, and I'll tell you one little story that proves it. And he couldn't, he was sitting there, you know, what could he say? That's one little story with David and Rona. So David said to me, he asked the Rav, Rebbe, can I shave or should I shave on Svira? Now, mind you, the Rav shaved Svira. He traveled between Boston and New York. I can testify that absolutely the Rav clanked into class clean shaven. Absolutely, no question whatsoever. So the Rav shaved during Svira. So here's David and the Rav's Talmidim. Who didn't shave during Svira in our time? In our time. Jay, am I right or wrong? You saw the Rav in Boston. So Jay looks at David and says, you shouldn't shave. You know, he knew who he was talking to. So, all right, I admit today, Svira, I came in Aliyah, I'm embarrassed. I say everyone is not shaving. Oh, my sons-in-law don't shave. My grandchildren don't shave, so I shave Friday. I made a compromise, Fred. There's some halachic basis, Fred. So this is the Rav he could give. You know, over the argument over synagogue council, if you recall what went on between Rabbi Louis Bernstein and Rabbi David Hollander, two Talmidim of the Rav, and David Hollander, I spoke with the Rav, and the Rav told me absolutely no. And Louis Bernstein, I spoke with the Rav, and the Rav told me absolutely yes. Now, who's telling the truth? But each one, you know, spoke with the Rav. The Rav understood where they're coming from. They have their own prisma, and that's the way they comprehended the Rav. So, Joseph Plushkin, this book is really, really very good. The volumes that have come out in the Rebbe, one after another, are excellent. Now, that night in 51, so let's just talk about the first few talks the Rebbe gave. Before we come to the Maima, which changes the world, I would say. So, one of the talks the Rebbe gave, Yisrael the Oraita v'kodesh b'richu chadru. No, it's a maimer in Zohar. And what does it mean, Yisrael the Oraita v'kodesh b'richu chadru, that the Jew, the Torah, and God are one. Well, just think for a minute. The Ribbono Shel Olam needs us? Needs a Torah? What does this mean? What does this mean? The Jew, the Torah, and God are one. And the Rebbe went on, loving God is not enough. I'm now quoting for the Rebbe's talk. The Nissen Plushkin, there's a recording of the talk. It's not something that is not accessible. It was recorded. And Nissen Plushkin has a chapter in his book, I'm quoting from page 35 on, where he actually writes up the heart of the talk. Loving God alone is not enough. Without love of Torah and love of one's fellow Jew, the love of God will not endure. On the other hand, where love of one's fellow Jew exists, this will eventually bring also a love of Torah and a love of God. And the Rebbe went on and on, or the Rebbe-to-be went on and on, that if you don't love your fellow Jew, your love of God is lacking. And like this is a triple chord, chut ha-meshulash, totally intertwined, totally interconnected. And the Rebbe went on and on this topic. Fine. Now, one second. I want to tell you a little story. I want to digress before I come back to the Maimah Chassidim. My wife asked me a question. I don't know. These last years, she's gotten involved going to Sheorim, intellect, Yakar. And she says to me, why did God create the world? I said, that's the question you're asking? Why God created the world? You're not familiar with that classic work, the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik? And I opened her eyes. Let's take a Mishnah. Chagiga. Perek Bet. Mishnah Aleph. And this famous Mishnah, Ein Doshin Barayat B'Shlosha V'lo B'Maisa Breshit B'Shnayim V'lo B'Merkava B'Yachid Elem Chayach Chacham U'Meibin Midaito. And you all know this is the reason we try not to study Zohar before we're 40. Call, and then the Mishnah continues. Call hamistakel ba'arba devarim ra'uilo ki'ilu lo ba'la olam. Mala mala, mala mata, mala sni, mala achar. Wow. There's certain questions we're never going to answer. We're humans. We're basar v'dam. We can't understand everything. What happened? Before us, after us. Before the world, after the world. What's upstairs, what's underneath. We're limited. This is something we're taught when you start exploring what Torah is about. So right away you know you are a human being, you can be a tremendous intellect, you can be a gaon, you can be a tzaddik, but you are still a ben tamuta, and you are limited. And this is an open Mishnah in Chagiga. Right or wrong? An open Mishnah. So, when someone asks you, why did God make the world? Your natural reaction should be, that's a wonderful question, but only God can give you that answer, and we mortals are limited. Look at the Mishnah in Chagiga. No answer. But we have to go on, living, believing, observing, continuing the romance of the Jewish people. We're not going to understand everything. And that's exactly what a true Litvak will say. How do I know I'm right? How do I know I'm right? Because the Rav said it many, many times. And I take you to the world of the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik, Volume 1, Page 146, Rakefet has translated into English a paragraph from the Halachic Man. Isha Halacha, the Rav's magnum opus. This. Say that you're a chassid.
I studied philosophy for 21 years.
All I can tell you, you say it's the greatest. I'll accept
it. He said it.
All I can tell you is
he said it in the letter. He said it was superior in form and content to halacha.
So it shows you how the Rav, but they're written at the same time. You know, you can't say.
No, he rewrote it later.
I know what he did later. He didn't exactly rewrite it, but he drove the RCA crazy with correction. It cost them a fortune to publish. But I'll accept, fine, you can have if I argued with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and I felt the hesped for Reb Chaim is better than the one from Reb Velvel, and he said the opposite, I have a right to have my opinion, but I'll never argue with a student. Let Alex be correct. He is the glassman. I am the dirt man. Okay? Alex, you can be correct. And the Ish Halacha, one time a kid from BMT leaves BMT after 2 years, wonderful kid, he goes to Bar Ilan. And he comes back to me, he says, in Bar Ilan, the professor knows you and this and that, and he says, I should tell you, how can you be such a Talmud of the Rav if Ish Halacha is studied in Catholic schools, priests? Was studying it with the when they had an English translation, it became a bestseller, JPS, the early 70s. And in Catholic, I said, you go back and tell your professor that's the greatest proof how important it is, because it's a universal essay. It's more than just Judaism. You follow? Milua Taras V'Kiv Shuha. And then the difference between Judaism and universal religion. But I said it's a universal essay, and the fact that they study it in a Catholic school just proves how important it is. So he went back and told the professor, and the professor said, gee, I never thought of it that way, Rabbi. He said, Rabbi, Kevin has a point, the professor said. Anyway, the Rav tells a little story. Reb Simcha Zelek, a disciple and friend, this is the Rav speaking, it's not me, I'm just translating. Reb Simcha Zelek, a disciple and friend of Reb Chaim, recounted the following incident to me. Once he and Reb Chaim, now again, let me not take anything for granted. Nakan, do you know who Reb Simcha Zelek was? So you should have shut your hand up right away, because without knowing who Reb Simcha Zelek is, it's like not knowing that 2 and 2 are 4. You think 2 and 2 are 22. Reb Simcha Zelek, Reb Chaim destroyed Lithuanian Jewry from being able to ever paskin a shaila again. Okay? Because Reb Chaim always saw two ways. Duality. Dialectical thinking. You understand? No, if you have a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid, and you can give endless shurim to explain the Rambam and the Ravid, you never reach a conclusion. You got a paskin one way or another, right or wrong. So this is why the Litvakin, it was unbelievable what happened. Slabodka had to establish a Kolel Horah after World War I to train Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky had a paskin. Reb Moshe Feinstein, we had a miracle. He never learned in a big Litvashi yeshiva. So he was able to paskin. He grew up with his father, Ishtat Rav, Reb Pesach Priskin, the Shikolov Rav, Baruch Hashem. Today in Israel, we have poskim because we have the paskin, you have Dayanim, but Reb Chaim. So when they elected Reb Chaim, look, Reb Yitzchak Ochanan, Reb Chaim, wouldn't give Reb Yoshe Ber, the Beit HaLevi, sent his two children, the older brother and Reb Chaim, to Reb Yitzchak Ochanan for smicha. He would only give the older brother smicha. Not Reb Chaim, would not give Reb Chaim. See, so Reb Chaim, Ketnish Kain Achronim, that's not a paskin, that's not a Gilgal Achronim. His whole world is Shas and the Rambam and the basic Rishonim. Fine, and that's not me telling you that. It's written up in the new book, which is put out in the Haredi world, the first volume on Reb Chaim's life. His father wouldn't give him speech. Fine. So they elect Reb Chaim Rav of Brisk right away. Who's going to paskin? So Reb Chaim said, I'll only become Rav in Brisk if you bring in a dayan to paskin. So Reb Chaim looked around, and from the old times that he knew from the Lushan, who poskin muvhakim, he said, you bring in Rav Simcha Zalagriga. And Rav Simcha Zalagriga was Briska Dayan. He was the posek. He was Rav Chaim's closest friend. He perished in the Holocaust, Lo Aleinu. I don't have to tell you what we lost in the Shoah. He was older. He was not a youngster when he died. But in YU, there's a nephew of his, Golevsky, who taught for many, many years. He's in his 90s today. He's a nephew of Reb Simcha. It's a sister's son. He was a nephew of Reb Simcha Zalagriga. So here, the Rav tells a story. Reb Simcha Zalek, a disciple and friend of Reb Chaim, he learned by Reb Chaim in Voloshin, but he learned by the Netziv too. He is like, his method was not Reb Chaim's. He knew Reb Chaim, but he also knew how to paskin. Recounted the following incident to me. Once he and Reb Chaim visited someone's house in Vilna. While they were waiting for their host to appear, Reb Chaim glanced through some works of Chabad Hasidicism that were lying on the table. The books apparently discussed the question of God's motivation in creating the world and cited two opinions. One, God created the world for the sake of his goodness. Two, he created it for the sake of his grace. Chazdo. Goodness. Someone gives you a gift, they're good to you. Chazdo. Someone helps you across the street. My grandson, one of my grandsons this morning was driving his grandmother-in-law to a senior citizen she's moving into. She just lost her husband, Lo Aleinu. These are people who survived the Nazis and the communists. No, he's doing a chesed. Absolutely. Rav Chaim turned to Rav Simcha Zalek and with utter seriousness told him, both views are incorrect. The world was created neither for the sake of his goodness nor for the sake of his grace, but for the sake of his will. Ritzon, no. Get it? Wait, 1 second. You know my book by heart. I'll get there. But no, hold off. It's unbelievable. Ritzon, no. In other words, what is Reb Chaim saying? What are these chavadnikim? What are they, fools? They're going to figure out why God created the world? They forgot the Mishnah in Chagiga? You don't understand. Vic, you come from a distinguished family with so much yichus, but still, you're going to know what was before, what was after, what's up, what's down? So no, absolutely. God wanted to make the world. You can't start asking questions. Wow. This is a Litvish approach. Now I have a footnote, but I'll tell you, the footnote is very interesting. Because you see, this, Labriot, Moshe, this story stayed with the Rav for so many years. When did he write Ishalacha, Jay? Do you know? Ishalacha? Early 40s. It appeared in 44. Rakepit's theory? He had just come to what is YU today. There was so much opposition to him. Remember all the Lashon Hara, the Rechilut, the Kashrut scandal. He wanted to establish a name for himself. To publish in learning. It's a briska. But philosophy, mele, you can't make a mistake and you can't be right. You understand what I'm saying? So he prepared Ishalacha. It was published in Talpiyot in 44. When that appeared, people who lived the year had told me the world was shaking. They couldn't believe we had someone in 1944 who was capable of this depth. People compared it to the Mora Nevuchim and beyond. 1981. On in years. On in health. Yeshiva University. February 10th, 1981. the exact same story was told again. And here the Rav described the incident as having occurred near the Baltic Sea, where Reb Chaim and Reb Simcha Zelig were vacationing. The two went to visit a relative of Reb Chaim's who was a Chabad Chassid. And it was in this relative's house that they discovered this machloket, leman tuvo or leman chastam. Okay? Those are the two versions. But the hard...
In the halachic man.
Oh, you're talking about the footnote in the halachic man, yeah.
Rav says, he qualifies and he says, well, but in reality, Chabad actually holds that view as well, that the world was created for the sake of his will. You quote the term Keter from Kabbalah.
Hold off. We will get there. But Will, Keter, you're in very interesting territory. Let the Rebbe handle it. Okay? Now I know what you're referring to. Okay, before I go further, I'm coming now to the heart. But let me just, with attendance, I recognize everyone here. One second. I see that Sanchanim were Chad Pami. What's the story? Your Torah Shrag is away today. And they're coming back? Okay. One second. What's your name?
Danny Kaplan.
Wait, I have your name, so I have to learn Danny Kaplan. You were at Sanchan too. And give it to you, right? You were not at Sanchan, so how come I wrote down Sanchan? Okay, let's Danny Kaplan. Okay, everyone else is on the list. Give it to the young man next to you and fill it in. No, he has a pen. Okay. So, Danny, what have we said? Here's a fascinating story where a dyed-in-the-wood Litvak opens up the Mishnah and please don't get involved in trying to figure out Leman Tuvo, Leman Chasto. You're a human being. You're here today. You're gone tomorrow. You follow me, Danny? You're limited. Your knowledge is limited. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to prove? And Reb Chaim says so decisively to Reb Simcha Zelig, Leman Ritzono. Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to make the world. That's his choice. That's what he wanted to do. We have no say in the matter. Fine. What Alex said can very well be that even a Chabadnik can't deny the Mishnah. So as much as he tries to find meaning, ultimately he has to realize he's limited. Okay, I'll accept that. Look what happened that night. That night, that chassid said to the Rebbe, Jason, Divrei Torah is not enough. It doesn't satisfy us. We want a Maimon Chassidit. Now, for the Rebbe to say a Maimon Chassidit meant he had accepted the Lubavitch leadership. All eyes were upon him. Everyone understood that he probably was ready to accept the Lubavitcher leadership, because if you recall what I said last time we met, two different chairs were prepared for the Rebbe. One among the audience, first among equals, or one up front where he would sit when he gave a hitvadut afarbengen menet fabrengt mit the chassidim once a month at the sixth Rebbe's request. And when the Rebbe walked in, when the sixth, seventh Rebbe to be walked in that night, he took the seat up front. So evidently, when this elderly chassid challenged the Rebbe to give a maimon chassidit, everyone knew the Rebbe would accept the challenge. The Rebbe stood up, and he began, based upon the last maimon that the sixth Rebbe publicized. This was the mima that he was handing out because he couldn't speak already. He had had a stroke. His speech was not clear. But right before he died for that Shabbat, this mima was prepared. And the seventh Rebbe continued. And this mima is known by Hasidim, Bat Basi Legani. Here in Israel we say Bati Legani. Where does it come from? What is it talking about? Shira Shirim, Perikei, Pasuk Aleph. Bati legani achoti kala ariti mori im besami achalti yari im divshi shatinu yeniyim chalavi ichlurayim shetu vishichru dodim. No? Dani, what's this pasuk talking about? What's going on here? So, I'll read you the latest translation, the Art Scroll translation. Latest one, there's JPS, there was Lisa before, so many different translations. We'll go with Art Scroll. To your tabernacle dedication, my sister, O bride, I came as if to my garden. I gathered my myrrh with my spice from your princely incense. I accepted your unbidden as well as your bidden offerings to me. I drank your libations pure as milk. Eat, my beloved priests, drink and become God intoxicated, my O friends. God intoxicated, O friends. I read the pasuk in Hebrew. I read the pasuk in English. What does the pasuk mean? What are we talking about? Come to my garden. The lover found his beloved in the garden. Eat, drink. What is he talking about? And in this pasuk, in this concept, the way Hasidus interprets it is the heart of the difference between Chabad and their thinking and Reb Chaim dismissing out of hand what Reb Simcha Zelig is showing him in the Chabad Svarim. You know what's involved here? And then you come back to what the Rebbe had said previously that evening. Yisrael d'oraita v'kudshu b'richu chathu. God is not complete unless the Jews acknowledge Him, unless the Jews love Him. As the Rav said so many times over the decades I studied with him, hard for us to comprehend. But the Ribbono Shel Olam, who's all powerful, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the piyut we said on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, V'chol Ma'aminim, all powerful, Hinei, Kiyat HaYotzer, can shape, can do as will what he wants, but Kaviyachal, God is not ultimately happy, fulfilled, using our language, unless the human being acknowledges him. And this is why God is overjoyed when he can come into his gan, his habitation, his tabernacle. That's the way Chazal understood it. But we can understand it much broader. Gani, this beautiful world that he made. And he sees, we acknowledge him. We observe the Torah. We pay homage to him. He's part of our lives. We live according to his will. more than just the Jew. Every human being, we live with the Sheva Mitzvot, the Noahide commandments. Our lives are sanctified. If that is the case, God is overjoyed. Barsi Lagani Achoti Kala. Ariti Moriim Besami. I see you're observing. I can smell the spices, the incense. Ochalti Yariim Divshi, Shatiti Yaniim Chalavi, Ichlu Reim, Shituvi Shichru Dodim. The more you enjoy this world and sanctify it with God's words, the more you become my partners, the more you strengthen me, the more you empower Yisrael the Oraita V'kutcha Berichu Chatu. Start to see what's happening here? With me? God, Kava Yachal, needs us. According to Rav, needs us. Who are we? What are we? But this was the divine plan. Whether he made the world, made it so Noah, Chasdo, V'tuvo, becomes very insignificant now. But we have to deal with our reality. Yisrael V'yoraita V'kudsha Berichu. And there can only be a Kudsha Berichu acknowledged in the world, by the world, if Yisrael V'Oraita live in accordance with the divine will. And this is exactly what happened that night. And this is the description of someone who's listening to the tape. I don't know if he was there. He probably, I don't know if he was alive in 1951. I don't know if Joseph Plushkin was alive yet. But his father was there. His grandfather was there. Ramash now began to read aloud the first passage, Basi Lagani, as if all he was doing was just teaching aloud the Friedrich Rebbe's Maima. He was reading it as if, but you see, there was a tremendous depth to here. Continuity. He always referred to himself as the Shaluach of the Sixth Rebbe. In a soft, almost tremulous voice, the Rebbe's emotions can be detected in the tape recording of the speech. The Rebbe's lengthy, tear-soaked discourse unfolded. Slowly but surely, the elucidation of the Friedrich Rebbe's Maima turned into a completely new and innovative talk, all presented as if it was all along embedded in his father-in-law's words. The theme of the Maima was a midrashic passage that describes the purpose of creation. Here you come to Chabad terminology. God desired to have a dirah b'tachtonim. You understand what that means? God wanted. He was in heaven. He didn't need anything else. But he decided to have a second home. A home among mortals. Dirah b'tachtonim. A home. Yeah, but this is the way Chabad interprets it. Very powerful. Dirah b'tachtonim, a home among mortals. A home on the earth. A home among the people. And the Rebbe went on and on that night that this calls for a tremendous reawakening of our thinking, of our desires, of our goals. We are the seventh generation, and the Rebbe went into a whole discourse. What makes the seventh generation so important is the number seven. There's an entire book written on the Rebbe Hashvi'i by a Chassid, by Professor Krauss of Bar Ilan, who's a Chassid, a Chabadnik, and we are the seventh. And Chabad today is entering the seventh generation from the Alter Rebbe. And now is the time to make this very clear to all the Hasidim and through the Hasidim to the entire Jewish world and ultimately to the Gentile world that we have to bring God down into this world. This is our goal. This is our challenge. Throughout the talk, the Rebbe softly wept. Often many seconds would go by until he composed himself. Then he would resume speaking, returning to his central theme, the obligation of every chassid, every Jew, to carry out God's mission on earth, and to do so with overflowing love. This is what set the stage, what would set the stage for God to redeem the world. Be my partners, the Rebbe beseeched those present. We're in this together, for this is the responsibility of every member of the Jewish people. Everything now depends on us. Wow. So you start to see something developing here. A Litvak? Did you study in Slabodka? Did you study in the Vardik? Know what it means to be a Litvak? Self-development. Gadlut in Torah. Working out your soul, your commitment, the Ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. All right, when I studied in Slabodka, one approach, Gadlut Adam, who are you? Created in the image of God, Yitzir Kapav. How many Shmuisin I heard, Sichot, from the altar of Slabodka? Natan, I wore a jacket, I wore a tie, the latest styles. Oh, you didn't have a beard in Slabodka. A young man shaved, clean shaven. Donnie, this was a sign of youth, dignity. When I learned in Novotik, you worked out your soul, you dressed like a bummy, a slob. You went into a pharmacy and asked for a pound of potatoes. There's deep sense behind it. I gave many lectures on this. It's not for now, Alex. But that was what it was all about. You, your relationship with God. Chabad, Hasidus, the Rebbe, Yisrael, the Oraita, Mikutsha Berichu, Chatu, Barsi, Lagani. It's a different world altogether. You cannot be complete unless you're making the world better, bringing God down to earth. Dira betachtonim. You cannot be complete. The Jewish people cannot be complete. We can all be from. Could you imagine? I told the Chabadnik who interviewed me, I'd be a lot happier with the situation here if I knew Netanyahu was putting on Tefillin every morning and Sefelt Nishtama, a Mincha, and doesn't miss davening Mincha. And he told me only a Chabadnik could say this. Netanyahu puts on Tefillin every morning. I hope he's right. That's all I can say. With the Charlie, what do you think? What do you think? I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe I was being too much like Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich with that comment. Deserve a smack. Deserve a smack. Could be. But, wow. Chabad? The world, the Sheva Mitzvah, do you start to understand what is happening here? The seeds. What the Rebbe spoke about that night ultimately becomes the diagram, the plan, the entire scheme of Chabad until this very minute. It's not just the Rebbe's lifetime. A true Chabadnik wakes up. What am I going to do today to bring God closer to the world? Dira betachtonim. Mark, how do I know I'm right? Moshe, come on, a little kid from the Bronx who eulogized Yogi Berra an hour ago. Chutzpah, how do you know you're right? You're interpreting, all right, I can't say like Alex, I studied philosophy so many years. I can't get along with philosophy. My thrust is Shas Paiskim and my Yetzer Hara is Jewish history. I always told my grandchildren, I have some grandchildren who are into philosophy, Hasidus, so I tell them I had a problem with it because I never found one answer. I said with Shas and Paiskim I could always reach an answer, but with philosophy I could never find one answer. And you know, it's true, in the Gemara, I've given many talks on pluralism and halacha, pluralism and hashkafa. Those of you who studied me over the decades know we always try to reach a conclusion in halacha, right? We always go towards the Rambam, his Hakdama LeMishnah Torah. Philosophy remains open. But how do I know I'm right? If Alex would say it, fine. How many years did you study philosophy? 21 years? Okay. I didn't even know you're older than 21. How do I know I'm right? Danny, let me read something to you from the Rav. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Do me a favor, check it out in the original, because it's a lot here. But the Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Volume 1, page 153. I heard it from the Rav many times, but I translated into English word by word from a tape of the Tshuva Drasha, September 23rd, 1974. Now, this Tshuva Drasha was summarized, not published word by word, but it was published in Yemei Zikaron. It's one of the volumes that the Jewish Agency put out. However, I translated it word by word from the tape. And let me summarize. The Rav told the following story. I remember as if it happened only today. It was a few days before Rosh Hashanah. And our Malamed was teaching us about the Mansa, the High Holy Day prayer book. We were studying a liturgical addition to the public repetition of the Musaf service. You all know that the Musaf service on Rosh Hashanah is the longest Shmon Esrei of the year. When my grandchildren were little and those who lived near me and I would daven with them, I told them for each time they see me cry and can tell me afterwards, they get a shekel after Rosh Hashanah. And I paid off a lot of shkalim over the years, Baruch Hashem, but I hope they know how to daven on Rosh Hashanah. But the repetition is even longer than the original service because we add piyut. Vayatrucha neza tifara vayatkatsku harim rina vayitzhalu iyim b'malchecha vayakablu ol malchut aleichem vayramamucha b'kalam vayishmu'u rechokim vayavau vayitnu lecha keta malchut. What you refer to, that the davening, the dedication, the Jews who be so sincere that many will hear about God and Yishmachu Rechokim, they will come and join the Jews. Vayitnu lecha keta malchut. And they would give God a crown. Now just think, we spread this in the davening. For the Hasidim Chabadnikim, this becomes not just a piyut. Rosh Hashanah night is called by Chabadnikim Koronatzia Nacht, the coronation night. This is the first occasion of the new year that the Jew gives a royal crown to the Almighty. The first time in the new year that the Jew declares our God and God of our fathers reign over the whole universe in thy glory. Who grants the royal crown to the Almighty? Who gives the royal crown to the powerful master of the universe? My Malamed, along with many other poor Jews, granted the crown to the Almighty. Today, I know some wealthy Jews, but years ago I knew only poor Jews, and I put in brackets laughter. Alex, are you aware why I do that? I write in the introduction, we're living in the world of art scroll. No one believes a Rebbe can crack a joke and have a sense of humor. So I just wanted everyone to know when the Rebbe said this, the audience laughed. He said it for them to laugh, to lighten the but it's driving the message home. However, the crown was not adorned with precious metals or jewels. It was a crown constructed out of Jewish tears and endless sacrifice for Torah. It was adorned with the love of Jews for the Almighty. Fine, good, Karanatzi enough. V'yitnu lecha ketem malchut. I asked my teacher a simple question. After all, the Holy One is the master of the universe. He is the creator, sustainer, and constantly renews the creation. The psalmist says, 145:15, the eyes of all look hopefully to thee. Why does the Almighty need our acquiescence that he is king over all the earth? Why does he need our crown? Why does he desire that his creatures crown him? After all, he is the source of creation, and yet he wants us to crown him. This was a good question that I asked as a youngster. And you got to understand the Rav, these thousands of people are looking at him. This is the Einikel of Rav Chaim. This is the son of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. This is the first cousin once removed to Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is the Einikel Rav Elia Prushina. This is the Ur Einikel of the Netziv, of the Beit HaLevi, of Rav Yitzchak Volozhin, of Rav Chaim Volozhin. And the Rav is saying, this was a good question. Even today it remains an excellent question. I do not remember exactly what my Malamed answered me. I do remember that he quoted from the Song of Songs 7:6, Melech Asur Birahatim, the king is held captive in the tresses thereof. Pasek and Shir Ashir. What does it mean? My Malamed interpret this to mean that the king of the universe is bound in chains. What did he mean? It is only now that I understand what my Malamed meant. Now I comprehend what I did not understand as a child. In the physical world, in the great cosmos, the Almighty is the all-powerful subject, initiator, and sustainer. Everything is His, and we have no part in it. He is king over the world, whether or not we desire His kingdom. However, in the Jewish existential experience, the Almighty wills that the Jew should carry the burden. The Jew must become the active subject and evolve his historical experiences. The Jew, through his own free will and choice, is to formulate and influence the Jewish historical process. In the ongoing struggle for Judaism and Jews, God has given His authority to humans. He will help us, but we must initiate the process. in regard to the Jewish saga, the Almighty, so to speak, is a king held captive in chains. We must untie the chains and enable divine providence to complete the task that we begin. It is a basic principle in the Jewish historical experience that we must crown the Almighty. And that is why Rosh Hashanah night is Koronatzion Nacht, is coronation night. Wow, what a powerful talk, what a powerful idea. That's the Rav. But that's the Rav who, due to factors beyond his control, he winds up in Chaslovich. His formative years, the grandson of Reb Chaim, Chaslovich, a Chabad city, thousands of Chabad families, a Cheda, a Melamed, his Melamed, Reb Baruch Riesberg, an Ur Einikel of the Alter Rebbe of the Baal Tanya. And this is what he was exposed to. And this is why those of us who were in yeshiva at my time, there were a lot of Litvish Rosh Yeshiva. The only one I can think of who was not Litvish was Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld, and boy did he suffer. He was the only one who knew how to paskin. He was the posek. He headed up the beitin in the yeshiva. He was an ungarisha. But boy did the Litvakin, I don't want to use any bad terminology, but they look down upon him, the Litvakin, they look down upon the Ungarisha, the Yekisha, Mandachash, may don't even mention a German Rav in their presence. And Chabad, Hasidim, Chabad, they look down, the Rav with all his gatlet, with all his Litvisha disposition, but such a deep, profound understanding of Chabad. A great gift I got from the Rav. You understand? I've told you more than once, if you have a Rebbe who tells you everyone else is no good and only he knows the way, run away as quickly as you can. If you have a Rebbe who says, there are many viewpoints, but this is the viewpoint I take, but there are other viewpoints, that's a wonderful Rebbe who understands the heart of Torah Hashem Tamima. But this Koronatzion Nacht, just think what went on there. The Rav asked his Rebbe, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam need us? Could you imagine this little kid is asking the Rebbe? And it's a good question. A fabulous question. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam need? We've got to give the Rav, the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Kaddish Baruch Hu, we're going to give him a crown? Who are we? What are we? And he needs our crown. And yet, this is what Shir HaShirim is telling us. The king is tied up in chains. He needs us to untie him. This is exactly Koronatzion Nacht, coronation night. It's exactly the concept of Dirab B'tachtonim, Dani. Exactly the concept of Batila Gani. When you acknowledge me, I have a home, I have come, I can be with you. Yisrael, the right of the Kudsha Berichu Chad Hu. Wow. Let me just go half a step further. Now, if this is correct, we can understand what develops in Chabad. And we're going to spend quite a few weeks taking this theme further. We from the Litvish world, the Yekish world, take it as you wish. So ultimately, we become good Jews. But what are our goals in life? Our goals in life will take Rav Shimshon Falhirsch, Torim Derech Eretz. We live a normal life, sanctified by Torah. The Litvisha world, fine. You take what's called the Haredi world. In America, it's not exactly the same, but the Haredi world here in Israel, what's your goal in life? To sit, to learn, not to leave the Beis Medrash. You know what's going on. Ultimately, the success of the Litvisha world has become so great that the success is undermining this concept. There's a limit how many people can sit and learn and not leave the Beis Medrash and not go to work and not support themselves. All right, many of the Litvisha Gedolim say this was a historical process. We needed these past 60, 70 years just to sit and learn in order to create Gedolei Yisrael, Talmidei Chachamim, make up for the vacuum created by the Holocaust, but slowly but surely we can come back to a normal lifestyle. And that's a normal lifestyle. A Litvisha priority. You have to continue learning, you have to continue learning, dedication. But fine, you go into the big world and you support yourself in dignity. It may not be the German concept of Torah and Derech Eretz Lachatchila, but certainly b'diavad, they move along the same parallel lines. You take the Hasidic concept, and particularly and specifically the Chabad concept today, it's a total different conclusion. You want to be a good Jew? Your being a good Jew depends upon every other Jew being a good Jew. And even if every other Jew is a good Jew, you're still not successful until every human being acknowledges the presence of God. See the difference? Now you can start to understand. When I learned in Lakewood, we were learning around the clock. So Chabad was first getting started. Things were happening in Eastern Parkway. Chabadnikim were going out on the streets and were talking to people. Did you put on tefillin? Did you take lulav and etrog? In Lakewood, they laughed at them. Beitel Torah. They could never understand Chabad. Chabad, on the other hand, how can my Jewish life be complete if God doesn't have a home to come to? If the garden is not filled with beautiful flowers to greet the Almighty, with beautiful spice, with sacrifice, with a mishkan, with Jews, bati legani, how can I be happy if the totality of the Jewish people is not reaching out and giving God a crown and creating coronation night? You see the difference? It's two different worlds. And then you come to what the Rebbe got involved with, which I can never forget. I was in Melbourne, Australia. I think I told you the story. I told it over the years. So Shabbos morning, we finished davening in Mizrahi, which was hosting me. And they said, we'll go for a walk now. It's the Caulfield area. All different Jews, all the shoes. Matter of fact, in that area, all week, most of the lights work that you have to press a button to cross the street. Shabbos, the local police turn it off and all the lights work automatically because there's so many from Jews in the area that have to cross the streets. And basically Australia, until the Arabs came, never had anti-Semitic incidents. As a matter of fact, 100 years in Australia, 100 years ago, World War I, the leading hero in Australia was the general of the army, General Monash, who was a practicing Jew. The university is called Monash University, named in his memory. And they turned off the lights, and then they turn it off automatic, and they turn it off that you have to press, and it becomes totally automatic, the Shabbos Yom Tov. So we go for a walk, and they show me this shul and that shul. And then I see people coming out of a shul with big beards, husky Australians, tall, strong people they have to be to have a concept of down under. They're going to be totally independent because they're so cut off from the rest of the world. And I look at them, they tell me, these people are not Jewish. What do you mean they're not Jewish? These are Gentiles who accepted Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach and look up to the Rebbe as their spiritual leader. And they were coming out of the Shul Shabbos, Shabbat Shalom, Good Shabbos, Good Shabbos. It was unbelievable. No, a Litvak would laugh. There's nothing to laugh. If our interpretation of Yitn Luchu, Ketner Malchut, if our interpretation of Dirab Tanktonim, if our interpretation of Bati Legani is correct, then you can understand the Rebbe, you can understand the Shluchim, you can understand this concept for Klal Yisrael, this responsibility, because I am not complete. If my fellow Jew is not complete, and even then we are not complete, unless Obama is part of us and Putin is part of us. Wow. So, I end off the class coming back to the story I told you, which I think I've told it to a lot of people, and we enjoy it. We enjoy it. Remember I told you that we were in Talpiyot and Hadar, and I said, tomorrow if we'll go upstairs, let's try this new place. I think it's called Greg, if I'm not mistaken. Have lunch there. And it was the middle of the day. We sit down and we order. And there are waitresses and two waiters. And suddenly I see a Chabadnik walk in. Might have been his mid-20s. But you can tell right away a Chabadnik, his hat, his dress, his beard. And immediately, two waiters run over to him, and he pulls out tefillin, and they're putting on tefillin. No, and I'm looking, and he could see I was a Litvak, but there was a sign of joy in my face that he's putting on tefillin on two young men. And he went like this, and I went back like this, and again he went like this, and we both understood each other well. That was the Rebbe. And she saw Fabringen and they're singing. And the Rebbe went like this. Their voices became 20 times louder. Wow. Whenever the Rebbe walked out and children were waiting outside, 77, 70 to greet him and would start singing, he would go like this. And the children, the intensity increased. And that's Chabad. Bati Lagani, build it, beautify it, make the tabernacle ready for the most honest guest you would ever have, the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'yitnu li keter malchut. And I thank Rebbe, I hope you're listening, that you gave me the ability to want to understand what Chabad is all about. This was unique. I didn't get it from any other Rebbe, Lechefer. I got it from the Rav. Ad kan. So what did we do today? Baruch Hashem. Today was the most important shiur, because everything else we'll be saying is a commentary on what happened to bring this into reality. But what do we do today? And this is the heart of Chabad. This is just as I said a year ago when I began on the Rebbe, as I said a year ago and I repeat it again, I could do the Rebbe in one lecture. There was a Rebbe, came to Crown Heights, a few hundred Chassidim, and this man was very successful, inspired hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands, ultimately millions. We never had a spiritual leader like him, and that's it. But that wouldn't do justice to the Rebbe, and particularly in this world today where some of you only know the Rebbe through the Messianist, and you laugh and smirk. I want you to understand who the Rebbe was. I'll deal with the criticisms. I'll get to the messianicism. I'm not skipping anything. I think I have a reputation of intellectual honesty, and I intend to live up to my reputation. but we have to understand the Rebbe. So what did we do today? We did basically the talk he gave at the first Fabrenian, where he becomes Rebbe, and when from Yisrael, the writer of Kutcher Baruch Chatu, he wasn't yet Rebbe. It was just the Divrei Torah. The Maima Chassidit Ambasi Lagani, that's where he stood up and closed his eyes and held the handkerchief, and that moment he became Rebbe. And that Basi Lagani, when you go into it with depth, Karnatsi Anach, I hear the Rav, I cannot tell you, I have a tape of that talk, how inspiring, how overwhelming. And the Rav talking about himself as a little boy, that's very important to a real Jew. You never live only in the present. You live, the rest of the world lives only in the present. We live in the past, future. The present is the least important part of our existence. Think about it. I can elaborate, but it's not for now. Now the freebies. This is the latest Mayanotecha. They put out a publication here. This is unbelievable. Rabbi Yol Khan's Divrei Torah here on Sukkot, our second to none. I could take the first part where he deals with Nisach HaMayim and Nisach HaYayin. I could turn it into endless drashot. Fabulous. Rabbi Yol Solomon. If anyone wants, this is what I spoke about yesterday. Charlie, if you're here yesterday's class via the website, you'll see what I spoke about. This is, it's by the way from Bloomberg. I didn't say it yesterday, but I see here it's from Bloomberg, how two guys lost God and found 40 million. If you want to see how depraved a human being can come when he runs away from the Basi Lagani, when he runs away the Dirabba Tachtonim, I've never seen two such craved individuals, graduates of Mi Yeshiva High School. God have mercy. These are interviews, Chabad, how they continue interviewing anyone and everyone who is ever influenced by the Rebbe. These are three individuals from South Africa, two Rabbanim and one very wealthy donor. And here too, it is fascinating, the Rebbe. Anyone who comes from the New York, New Jersey area, they're planning to build, this is from the New York Times, a tremendous mall in the Meadowlands, right across from Washington Heights and Upper Manhattan, and it's going to be the biggest mall in the United States. They intend to rival the mall in Minneapolis. And the New York Times says it must eat their heart out to write this. There are also plans for a kosher food court, a significant feature for an area with a large population of observant Jews. Ashreinu shezachinu lakach, halavai, they should come in aliyah. And finally, those of you who like pictures of Gedolei Yisrael and stories, this is from Circus Tent, how Rabbi Yisrael Tuvia Goldstein saw the difference between Hasidim and Litvakim in Siberia. And it goes on and on here. Very, very fascinating material. Dealing also with the Rebbarin, with the Reb Shneur Cutler and Rishul Shidduch. Very, very fascinating. This I wanted to give Steve. Not Steve. I wanted to give Yitz Rubin, but he's not here. And if anyone wants a calendar, I gave out 6 yesterday. My last remaining calendar. You are welcome to take it. My dear students, Be'ezrat Hashem, next Sunday we will pick up exactly where we left off. And boy, what we're getting into on Sunday, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, is minimal in when we get in to to the Yekker from Holland asking Reb Menashe Klein about tefillin on Chol Moed. And that's why I asked you the question, and you'll see Reb Menashe Klein in all his glory. Next Monday we pick up exactly where we left off at this moment in time with the Rebbe. Until we meet again in health and happiness, my dearest thanks for honoring me with your presence. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das v'danya.